T-minus 3, 2, 1, 0.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Launch Sequence Podcast, your space game podcast where we tend to talk about Star Citizen mostly. We're stepping into a nice little midweek 136 episode because Star Citizen had a bit of a controversy lately, as they do. They released a rather updated and a ship package that got a lot of attention in the general community. And a prominent YouTuber that I have watched the content of had some comments on it, and I thought maybe he could join us to talk a little bit more from the outside perspective how this all looks, and we could have a good candid sit back conversation about Star Citizen. So thank you, Lone Vault Wanderer, for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. I love your content. I've watched your videos for a little while now, and I think you got a great take on the games that you cover, and I think that after talking about Star Citizen a little bit, you'll probably understand a bit more about like why people really enjoy this game. But to start off today, I would love to talk about just kind of where you come from with games and your history with games and how you got into content yourself.
For sure. I mean, my history goes back right to SNES, N64 kind of days. And then I think when I really started to get into gaming was when I played my first Bethesda Game Studios game. To this day, Fallout 3, my favorite game of all time. And that's what wanted to get me into actually working in games in the first place as well. So I had the opportunity, it was years ago now, but I was able to work at Bethesda as a senior community manager for almost 4 years. And that was my kind of foray into the industry side of things. But at the same time, I also had my YouTube channel, and that I've been running that for over 10 years now. And then worked at Bethesda for a little bit, decided to take another job, and now I'm pretty much doing this thing full time. So I've been on both sides of the fence, if you will.
Yeah.
So yeah, like hopefully I can offer an interesting perspective when it comes to Star Citizen.
Yeah, I mean you definitely have had more insight into game development because of that, so that helps, I imagine.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it was on the AAA side. I mean, at the time it was before Bethesda had been acquired by Microsoft. So technically we were independent, but we were pretty big AAA independent. That experience versus something like Star Citizen is fairly different. So I'm fairly self-admittedly ignorant on a lot of the stuff that happened on the crowdfunding side and just crowdfunding and crowdfunded games in general.
In your defense, it's been a long time. It's a lot to pay attention to. It's been a good long while. What do you think it was that like really convinced you when it came to Bethesda games?
I don't know, man. It sounds cliche, but being able to kind of picture yourself in the shoes of the player you're playing as the protagonist, and just walking around, do what you want. I think what really drew me to Fallout 3 in particular was just like the feeling it gave you when you were exploring. You could just walk around for hours and it was serene and picturesque. And next thing you know, it's 6 a.m. in the morning and you're hearing the magpies at the window. You know what I mean? That was definitely what got me into Bethesda Game Studios games.
Yeah, I never even finished Skyrim because I just kept getting distracted. I never finished the main story. I agree with you there. I think my first RPG, like my first real RPG experience that I enjoyed was Oblivion. I mean, I really liked Knights of the Old Republic, and that was what really drew me into the genre, but I didn't like the whole time, turn-based action. And then, you know, got into Oblivion. It was much more straightforward. And like you said, you could just get lost in the world and go all around. And like that defined role-playing games for me for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And Oblivion is one that I haven't still played yet. My back catalog of games and my backlog is just ridiculous. I don't even want to talk about that right now. having a job and still trying to maintain a YouTube channel and still because when you have a YouTube channel, as you would know, you kind of have to try and be an expert at the games that you're covering.
Yeah.
And for so long for me, that was Fallout 4, Fallout 76, And so I would work and I would come home and I would play the game to be an try and be an expert and then to make videos. And because of that, so many games, you know, flew by me. Even older games like Oblivion, I just never got the chance to be able to pick up. Skyrim, right. I've played, but not Oblivion.
Yeah, I get that. Bethesda's got such a freaking catalog of games, man. I can actually say that I don't think I've finished any of their games. I might have finished Oblivion, but like that's what I always thought of a Bethesda game as. It's like, it's just kind of something that's always there for me because I never finish it. And I think Starfield is kind of the same sort of game for me. And yeah. I'd love to get your thoughts more on Starfield because I did, you know, I caught your thoughts on them before and some of the updates you've given since. And I know you enjoyed the game but had some reservations now that it's been like three months, four months, I don't know. yeah. How are your thoughts on the game still? Like, have they changed much?
So the honest answer, and I'll let you know now, and it's because of a combination of things. I'm not going to put it down just to the game because that's not fair. But I haven't played it properly in a little bit. The reason being, I reviewed it, so I put over 100 hours into it by the end of that. And then I'm like, all right, I want to start a new playthrough. I really wanted to level up my character. There's like, you can call it an exploit, but I think it's just tricky. Like, you're using the building mechanics to level up pretty fast.
And
they put it in the game and they haven't patched it out. So I was really addicted to that. So I leveled up a fair bit to get all the skills that I wanted to. And then I was like, all right, my character is ready. I'm going to start playing again. And the first quest that I did was the faction quest, It was the one on the planet with the, I think it's the Japanese faction.
Oh, Taijo? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it. Ryujin, the Ryujin story. Ryujin,
yeah, yeah.
I had the biggest mind blank right there. And honestly, dude, I played the other faction storylines and I hadn't played this one yet. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. It was so bad in the beginning. I really, really, really did not like that faction quest. So I stopped playing it. I haven't played it since then. And it was so disappointing to me because I'd come from the other, like the UC quest line was awesome. That was great. It started off great. And I loved it from start to finish. And then I went to this one and it was so night and day difference. I don't know why I did not enjoy that one at all. So essentially I put it down and I'm just waiting for new updates and possibly even the DLC to kind of start that playthrough again. And I probably won't start with that faction quest on anymore.
Okay. That's good to know because I started with that faction quest and I haven't gotten to the UC one. I also haven't really played properly in a while. Because just like you said earlier, when you're running a YouTube channel on a game, you got to master that game. And it's a lot's been going on with Star Citizen recently. But I started with the Ryujin quest and I actually kind of enjoyed that first quest because I got so much. It's been a while since I played a Bethesda game and I got a lot of like that Bethesda feeling from it when I was going and meeting different people on the quest and getting sidetracked with different side quests.
But all right, fair.
Now that I've had that Bethesda initial dose, I'm also interested in going back, you know, maybe when there's a DLC or even now because I still need to go properly finish the game and seeing some of those other faction lines, like you said.
I think the best time to jump back into it is definitely next month. Like they've said, every 6 weeks from February, we're going to have a new update.
Cool.
And they've definitely, the updates have been very light on since launch, really. Like there's been a few key ones like DLSS and other things, but I think from February is really when the game's going to start kind of kicking off again. And hopefully we get to DLC eventually.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, I'm really looking forward to like the lifetime of Starfield as a franchise. I think it feels kind of like it's in the same position Mass Effect had the opportunity to be. And I hope that like they can step things up for the second and third game. Cause I know like some of the stuff we'll talk about today are some of the things that do get thrown at Starfield. And I think, they're things that like, they come from the type of game that Starfield is and the limitations that come from it. But I don't think it's really all that fair the way that that game's criticized. Yeah. In terms of the ship, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank, but like the way that people talk about ship interactions and moving around the game, I don't think the problem so much is that you're not flying. I think it's just that you don't get the sense of scale that they're trying to sell. And you don't have to fly for that. I think Mass Effect has managed to do that at some time in some ways without actually flying the ship. But
yeah,
to make a game where you could just fly a ship anywhere is ridiculous. It takes 10 years and $600 million to Star Citizen. it seems to be taking.
I get it. And I think part of the problem that BGS encountered, and they touched on this prior to launch, they were really struggling with making a game that it's grounded in some sort of realism, because people don't know space. It's not just big. It is like impossibly big. No one can actually imagine what infinite actually means, and this thing could actually be infinite. So when you're in Starfield and you see a planet and you're slowly flying towards it, yeah, it's not going to increase in size because there is so much space between you and that planet, even though it's you think it's right in front of you. And to be able to try and change that up to make it feel more dynamic, you would have had to make it less realistic. Like, to be able to just fly from one planet to another, even within a solar system, to make it feel dynamic, that should take, you know, maybe a few minutes. That's not realistic at all. It's just not. It'll take you hours. I don't know how long to get from one planet to another within a solar system. Like, how long does it take for us with our current tech to get to the sun from the Earth?
Right.
Space is impossibly large. So I can understand how they were grappling with that. I think they should have probably let up a little even more on trying to make this game realistic, because that doesn't necessarily make for a fun game.
Yeah, it's tough because space is super big, and I think the hardest part about making a space game is making it big, but also making it accessible. Like you said, creating that scale gives you a situation like Elite Dangerous, where not as many people are going to get into the game because it's so much based on the traveling, or a game like Star Citizen, where it's just there's so much time that goes into travel again. And you don't really get to acknowledge how big space is unless that travel is a thing. And honestly, nobody wants to get down on their Xbox for 30 minutes of play and spend 6% of that time traveling. So like it's going to be a challenge, I think, for every single space game that tries to come out and make it mainstream to figure out what that balance is. Like, we got Star Wars Outlaws coming out soon, and they're going to have their own solution to it. But Star Citizen, part of what's taken it so long has been that they've been trying to build that sort of solution from the ground up to work in their own engine. So I guess instead of just hammering you over the head with details of the game, what do you know about it? What have you heard about Star Citizen?
So, like, I, like with many other people that aren't involved directly with Star Citizen and actually playing it, you hear on the periphery roughly how things are going in development. Like, I obviously heard about, when was it first announced? Back in 2010? 2013.
Yeah.
That's like roughly when I would have heard about it. And I just kind of not even kept my ear to the ground, but every time there was an article, usually on a PC Gamer or a Kotaku, IGN, whatever it was, that's how I got to know about the game. And getting a sense of, they kept putting dates on and they kept getting pushed back. And then the whole, like, we're going to release things in modules kind of thing. That is like my very top level knowledge of the game.
Yeah.
And that's probably why, like, you know, as sentiment towards the game, especially from mainstream media, started to sour, my personal opinion, just through implication, started to sour. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, so all the articles that you were seeing from the companies you were mentioning, do you remember like any of those being more positive in tone?
Well, I'd struggle.
Yeah, I know. Really, it's a long time ago. I get that. Yeah,
maybe in the early days when the Kickstarter campaign was going and the kind of the vision was being sold. But as things started to get delayed and things getting announced and just never coming to the game in the first place, like, that's when things started to sour. But really, I think it was when it was the money situation, with when you saw how much money Star Citizen was collecting in crowdfunding revenue, and still seeing all the news about delays and issues and stuff like that. I think that's when it really started to just constantly be negative.
Yeah.
And then the thing that I tweeted about the other day, for people that didn't know, was the ships and stuff that are being sold in the game at very, very high prices. That's when it started to kind of snowball. And now I just never see a positive article, unfortunately, anymore about Star Citizen.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny because a lot of times the headlines are negative, but if you go into the articles, they're fairly neutral. Like right now, I think with this stuff, it wasn't as much. But like sometimes you'll see the articles and then you'll see it posted and it'll have like all these negative reactions. Then you go and read the article and it's just like the patch notes.
Dude, but, it's the reality, unfortunately, and yeah. You and I know this, is it's clickbait. Clickbait
yeah,
sells.
It works.
You like, don't hate the player, hate the game kind of thing. If you're in that industry and you want your stuff to be read, unfortunately, sometimes you have to be a bit sensationalist, but the people that bear the brunt of that when it comes to games are the developers, are the publishers, and it sucks. And I'm not going to sit here on a high horse. I've used clickbait on my channel all the time. If you don't, you're gonna sink. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Like, I'm sure you've put out a video, it didn't do too well, so you threw a different thumbnail on it, and then it
just goes up.
Yeah.
Constantly.
That annoys me. Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with like the most basics. Have you heard of Squadron 42?
Yeah, I've heard of that. Very vaguely though, so feel free to explain it.
So they've basically, what they did was the real goal here, do you like know the background of the person who made this? Chris Roberts.
I read a little bit last night, like beforehand of the games that he was involved with, and saying that Star Citizen's meant to be what you enjoyed from them.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's had these games from the past, and Star Citizen is like a project that encompasses the basically two games that success those previous ones. And the single player one, Squadron 42, is actually kind of the jewel, right? It's the one nobody ever hears about. It's the one that got all the release dates. It's the one that always got delayed. Star Citizen didn't have a release date, I think, other than 2014. And so what they would do is they would have Star Citizen, the MMO, this open sort of test of the development that would be running. It's been running for 10 years now, and people can jump in and they can play it and try it and fly all the ships and everything. But really what the focus was developing this single player game and the game engine. And the MMO that we're playing is kind of like a test of that game engine. So like, I mean, just to put it into an easy metaphor is like if we were playing Elder Scrolls 6 right now. Like, that's essentially what we're doing with Star Citizen. And so Squadron 42 was taking up kind of a lot of that effort. And that's really where I think a lot of the controversy comes from, because Star Citizen itself has actually been updating, not a lot, but it's been updating regularly. And they have been kind of striving towards a lot more of the gameplay and stuff people want to do, whereas Squadron 42 has been almost completely hidden. So that's kind of the first thing, is that they're trying to build two games at the same time. And that's just it's not easy.
No, and how many people are in their dev studio at the moment? Do we know?
It's a lot now. I think it's over 1,200 now.
Okay, that's a lot.
They have grown.
Triple A numbers beyond that. Like that's like probably triple BGS or almost that.
So
yeah, that's a lot of people.
So the start was 12. I think. And a lot of times that's where I think people miss how this works, is that they didn't start with a big company. They didn't start with investors. It all came from the crowdfunding. So they have to build a game engine to build this game. They wanted to make the money to make that game engine. And they kind of had to crowdfund while they were building the engine.
Mm-hmm. It just sounds like a nightmare, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, dude. I'm covering it. I've seen how much of a nightmare it is. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
The problem that they have, the biggest problem they have, is that for this game engine to work, you need the money, right?
Yeah.
But in order to get the money, you have to sell an asset. Mm. So they're selling ships, because ships are a big part of the game. People want to fly them, sure. But these ships also depend on the game engine to do their functions. So first they have to sell these ships while building the features that will run the ships.
Yeah.
And that leads to people obviously getting ships that don't feel fully featured. So now we're starting to see that development catch up to all of these ships that have been sold. And a lot of the sort of annoyance people have had has been that it's taken so long to get there. So like when you hear about delays, you hear about it taking so long, that's true, but it's not necessarily indicative of the fact that they're not making the game.
No, that does make a lot of sense. I guess, and I thought we would get to it a little bit later, but is that why some of the prices, not of just the ships, but they're sold in packs, right? And that's why the price is going to get so high. Is that why we are seeing these kind of exorbitant prices when it comes to the packs of the ships? They're trying to justify development.
So the idea, the original idea, and like however much you want to believe this is up to you. Okay. Everybody interprets this a different way. But the idea is that all of this money going into the game is to support development. If you want to see this game made and you have $100 lying around and you want to give $100 to the development, you can, and they'll give you a ship in return. Now, that's a thing, but also you then can't release catalogs with ships and be like, hey, look at this. This is this price. That starts to get people into the idea that they're buying ships. And that's, again, where some of that controversy comes from. But the whole idea behind funding the game means, you know, hey, we've got these people who are saying they want to give us $10,000 to make this game possibility, right?
Yeah.
To pose a question to anybody who's listening to this, imagine the makers of all of the RPGs that you love couldn't make that perfect RPG because they were always tied down by timelines and investors and stuff, but they knew what needed to be done. And one of those people decided to quit and start a company, but they didn't have the money to do it. The only way they could do it was to get investors, but investors want to return quickly. So they would probably go to the people who all want that to be made. Now, I know plenty of gamers and they they want the game they want. Like, if you were making a fantasy RPG, people would pay thousands of dollars for it, right? Just on PayPal, right? Just on Patreon, you would give money. So the idea was that these people were asking, hey, can I give $10,000? Can I give $15,000? And they were like, let's make more expensive ships. Now, I'm definitely not somebody who is going to buy those ships. And I generally tell people not to, because it's easy to get into the idea you're buying ships. But that's why they made the pack that you saw. That's essentially the button to buy every ship that's ever been made over the last 10 years.
Every ship.
Yeah, that you're buying the whole, everything that they've released so far. It's because some people have done that, right? Over 10 years, they've wanted to fund all of that stuff. Mm. Instead of having to have 200 ships in your hangar, you just have one less list item that says you own them all. And the other reason people might do that is because MMOs have guilds, orgs, large groups. If you wanted to outfit a large group of, say, 500 people, you could just buy every ship in the game, and you guys don't have to each buy a ship. You just all donate into a pot and purchase on that account. So there's like different reasons for that to exist that all kind of make sense when you have more context, but it's still, you know, don't get me wrong, it's still pretty crazy that it costs that much. Because it's nuts in its own respect that you can spend that much money on a game that's not released. But at the same time, it makes sense when you consider that these are the people who are funding the game being made.
Well, yeah, on that element, it makes sense. And I think that's why it does take a lot of people off guard, because where my tweet, and I'll kind of paraphrase it for people that didn't see it. When I tweeted it, I was like, if any other AAA dev, I didn't say AAA, I said Bethesda or any other dev or publisher tried this, the industry would be up in arms, because you often... And almost, I can't think of another game that does this to the extent of Star Citizen. But obviously, when I'm talking about Bethesda and other AAA devs, they are very big. They have their own investment if they're private, or they're owned by someone like Microsoft, or they're owned by someone like PlayStation. Yeah. So they actually have the funding in hand to be able to make the game, whereas the dev of Star Citizen obviously doesn't have that, and they need to get the money from somewhere. So I understand like the backing behind it is completely different. But in my mind, a line should still be drawn somewhere. So, you know, you could have certain items or whatever available for $1,000, $2,000, $3,000. But when it progressively gets to that stage, when you're seeing numbers like $48,000, I think that understandably shocks anybody. And I'll give you another example to try and draw some sort of parallel. Again, we're not going to find a good example to directly compare Star Citizen's dev to someone else that is in a similar crowdfunded position. But I understand that with these ships as well, you have to be part of the Chairman's Club and spend like a grand or something to be able to purchase them in the first place.
Yeah.
So there is an example recently with Elder Scrolls Online that kind of upset the community. Recently, to their knowledge, there was a mount, and it wasn't even a good mount. It was considered a mid mount, but there was a mount that was only available to be purchased from the Crown Store if you had an SO Plus subscription, which is like, I don't know, 15 bucks a month or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was upsetting to players to have to spend that certain nominal amount of money every month to be able to purchase that mount, because you don't know how it's going to snowball if you don't complain about it now. So that's here. And then with Star Citizen, it is, well, it's $1,000 to enter the Chairman's Club, and then you can purchase these crazy, crazy amounts of ships. So the comparison from my experience was something like that, which is why I was so taken back by it. Do you know what I mean?
I get that. But the Chairman's Club doesn't bar you from buying anything. It's only the pack. So any of those ships are still able to be gotten. You don't have to spend enough to get those ships.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So there's still that caveat. But there is, I think, one ship that used to be under this caveat that you had to spend a certain amount of money to get it. And there's a whole controversy behind that. I think this is probably one of the biggest misconceptions that people have outside of the Star Citizen community. This community gets pissed. Like, it's not like everybody in this community is just happy with how things are, or is like everything's dandy. Like, we're constantly debating the problems that this game has, the mistakes they make in terms of marketing. And I think one of the more annoying things is that we all do that back and forth, and then when it comes to like the outside community, then everybody is like, nah, you guys are crazy. And we're like, no, we're trying to get them to finish this.
It's understandable when it comes from within your community, because like you are the ones that are most invested. Literally, sometimes monetarily, you are the most invested. So when you see other people coming in, even if they're saying the same negative things you might be, or the same critical things you might be, you'll be like, hold on, you're not actually involved. Do you care? We're saying this stuff because we want to see the improvements. You're saying it to try and get views. So,
and like, I don't want to say that there's no, like, it's it happens with every video game. And I think people do get carried away with it, especially on Twitter and Reddit. The arguments go on and on. And that's why, like, I wanted to reach out to you. I wanted to try and get in there before it started to get too fiery in the comments and just be like, let's just talk about it, because it doesn't have to be like that. So you had a good point there about like Microsoft and how they would be funding their games and stuff. I think one of the biggest things that people like about this is that there are no publishers. There's nobody really pushing it forward, or investors and stuff like that. But it does also make it lag behind. And I'm wondering, like, what's your view of that? If you, say, had the perfect game that you were expecting and you knew it could be made, but it just, the development kept going. Let's not say it was feature creep. Like, they set a goal and then they said, okay, now we have to develop all the tech to make that goal. But they didn't really know how long it would take. Like, would there be a point at which you would say, okay, this is long enough, just like throw in the towel? Would you want them to keep going? How would you feel about that?
It's a really tough question. I know you said like putting aside feature creep. That's obviously been a bit of an issue with Star Citizen, right? Is them keep thinking of new things?
To a much smaller extent than people think. What ends up happening is they lay out all these features, right, 10 years ago. And then they kind of just shut up about a lot of them. And so now that the development and code is catching back up, when they actually are developing it and putting it in the game, people think it's new. So it's...
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Look, to go back to your question then, obviously throwing in the towel isn't really an option, but I genuinely... And I know that Star Citizen has done this on the marketing side, but I think there is a reason why independent devs go and get funding from investors, because, and it's not just for obviously the capital investment and the money that you get from it is great. It obviously is, but there is some level of oversight there. There is an investor that does want a return, And that's going to push you. That's going to push you. You're going to have to set not just soft deadlines, like hard deadlines. You need to do this by this date because I want to see a return from investment. Now, this is speaking as someone that's, again, still very ignorant of the kind of the deep workings of Star Citizen and the development. But would that not ultimately be a good thing? You had a serious investor back in the game, but was like, I want to see a roadmap. I want to see this done by then, this done by then. Would that not light a fire a little bit under the devs? Because that's what you see in AAA dev. Like you can't have a development studio that's like, and I'm not saying that they're sitting on their hands, but they are taking a very, 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 very long time. And at some stage, no one's suggesting that they're not working hard, but is the right approach there? Are they actually like focused enough or doing what needs to be done, no matter what issues are coming up, to be able to hit the deadlines that they're setting? I think having an investor there could actually help expedite that. And then you're better off as gamers because you're getting the features even earlier, even though they might not be as fleshed out as they could possibly be. But that can be added back, you know, down the line with further updates and whatnot.
I think that there's a definitely a midpoint. There needs to be some level of accountability for sure, but it always comes down to motivation. And the people who are funding the game right now, from what I know, are motivated on the fun of the game, right? They're always going to be seeking out the most exciting, interesting game. Whereas an investor will, if they're doing their job right, be seeking out the highest return. And which is good. Like, we need high returns. Epic wouldn't be Epic if they weren't selling freaking Fortnite. But when it comes down to who we are, which are the people who, I don't care about how much money they're making. I mean, I want them to be in business, but I prefer them to make the best game they can. But like I said, there's definitely a line there. Like, I think that they have crossed that line in certain places, that they've taken too long to do certain things. And there's been problems with mismanagement in some places, problem with misdirection in other places, things that I think aren't alien to a new company either. So
yeah,
there's so many caveats to take, and that's kind of how I view a criticism of like Cyberpunk or Starfield. These are two games that get compared to Star Citizen, not because they're similar, but because they also took a decent amount of time to make. And then you get into the caveats of, well, you know, those companies were working on other games. Those companies were developing partnerships in other places. They didn't have as big of teams. And then you get into the caveats of CIG, which is, it's a new company. They didn't have a game engine. So like the direct comparison of how it would work based on whether it had an investor or not is always difficult for me to have as a conversation, but it always comes back to like the motivation of an investor for me.
So that's the thing that I'm struggling a little bit to kind of approach, because it's clear that, like, how many players does Star Citizen actively have? Are those numbers available anywhere at the moment?
Monthly active, but not so, like real time.
It's still like popular. Like you would say it's still popular. It has its core community there.
Yeah.
So my question is, like, I understand, like, you know, why they wanted to go crowdfunded in the first place, but I think there are investors out, and clearly there have been. There was the investors that helped with the marketing. They gave like $60, $70 million. I was looking the other night. Clearly, there would be interest on the investor side. Clearly, there is an audience for this game. I struggle to understand why. Maybe not necessarily from the outset, because you have to have a proof of concept and a proper, maybe a working demo to be able to convince any investor. But why didn't they do that at some stage? Why are they almost always relying on crowdfunding? Like, I struggle to think of why.
That might actually, you know, I can't answer that with full confidence. I would think
some of
that comes down to wanting to stay the path of what they've been doing. I think I do think that they make more money this way than if they went with a set investment. And that I say that because there's a lot of complications too with the ship sales. We don't know exactly what the future is of ship sales with this game. So for instance, if they do reach this Star Citizen 1.0 release, whatever they call it, where we leave alpha and beta, it's in its testing phase right now, but it reaches that sort of release all clear area. We don't know exactly, are they only going to be selling ships that are for starter players? Are they only going to be selling certain types of ships? That's still a question that's up in the air. And I think that that's something that they could still be holding on to as a way to fund the development past whatever that release is. Because they promised
that lack of transparency upset you, like not knowing.
Yes,
you know?
Like I said, dude, we have problems in this community.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a perfect situation.
But I can understand why, you know, people outside the game coming in saying comments like I did, admittedly, don't have the full context behind it. Because I can see that you are all incredibly clearly passionate about the game. A lot of you put a lot of money into this game. You just want to see it succeed. And you feel like other people are just putting it down for the sake of putting it down. Whereas with you, when you're saying critical things and things that are negative, you're doing it from a better place because you actually want to see the game go off and finally release, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of people also get surprised by the negativity because it only takes $45 to play this game. And a lot of people spend $45 and never look on the communities or YouTube or anything like that. They just like go around and fly a spaceship and deal with the glitches and then sign off. And sometimes when you're doing that for a couple weeks or a couple months and you get online and suddenly it's like, oh, people are angry about this. You suddenly react, you know, more strongly or you're just surprised. And I think sometimes people are like, because there are a lot more people getting into Star Citizen casually. We've seen people like Jack Frags covering the game, Level Cap Gaming, he's been on the show before and he covers the game a lot. So like people who watch those kinds of channels get into Star Citizen sometimes and it can be a little bit surprising, the discourse behind it when you get in.
I think this is it's not just with Star Citizen, it is with the games industry as a whole. We have, and we have to accept this, like with those of us that are in the bubble, we have our own little bubble and we get very loud, we say a lot of things. And we think like what we say is the be all and end all, and that's about it. But then you have this bubble, which is literally all the casual lay people that play games. And there's many, many, many more of them. Like us that are on the internet, we're on Reddit, we're on Twitter, we're making YouTube videos. We are the minority, right? Yeah. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
If you're watching this podcast, you are definitely the minority.
Like us, like you, like we are the minority. That is the only way to think about it. Like everyone else that plays games casually, they're not on the internet. Like every year, they'll see a Call of Duty drop, or they'll see this one random video recommended to them in YouTube, and think, "Oh, Star Citizen looks cool. I'll play it." And they won't even engage in the discourse. And that's where a lot of the surprise comes. If I'm talking to a friend who clearly plays games, but he doesn't look into them as closely as I do, and I say, oh, did you know this game had this issue? They don't know. And to be honest, man, they don't care. They don't care. So that's why they're getting a bit surprised when they see this negativity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and I think that's a combination of the time it's taken and the news that's come out about it. But
right.
Looking into Star, they do good stuff. I mean, we've talked a lot about kind of the shiftiness and really the marketing and the sales. And I will say that is that's the grosser side of this. I may regret using that word, but like that's the side I'm very gameplay oriented. I cover the features being developed, how they're being developed, when they're coming to the game kind of stuff. I generally stay away from like the ship sales and stuff because I'm fair. Like you said, I'm not a big fan of it. I understand it as kind of a necessity with the way that the gun game has been funded, but I would love if there was a better way.
No, and honestly, man, there are similarities that you can draw even within kind of my own field with Bethesda Game Studios. Like with Skyrim and soon Fallout 4 and Starfield, they're going to introduce what effectively are paid mods, but with creations, right? It's the same thing. Do I wish that the system was different? Do I wish it wasn't coming in the first place? In some ways, yeah, I like that modders are getting paid, but there's so much else to love. Sometimes, and it sucks because there is a business reality, and having worked in the industry, like when you see how the sausage is made, it sucks a little bit. So sometimes I do cop stuff on the chin when I see stuff from Bethesda Game Studios or other developers and publishers that they do that I don't like. I'll cop it on the chin because there is enough there that I like. But eventually there is a line that can be crossed where you're like, hold on, like let's push back a little bit. And unfortunately, it can be us in that bubble that I mentioned that speak loud enough to try and get developers and publishers to backtrack. Yeah. I fundamentally believe that it is revenue oriented. Like, they are doing this at the end of the day to have a living, to make money, whatever. But they are also strongly doing this from a place of passion and from a place of love. And sometimes that approach just needs to be course corrected.
Yeah.
So I can empathize, like, with the position that you're in, because it happens in Bethesda games too.
I mean, Bethesda's released Skyrim, I think, 10 times before Star Citizen released once.
A million times. But you know why they do it? Because it's easy work and it makes them a lot of money.
Yeah.
And the thing that I say to anyone, if you were in their position, don't lie, you would do the same. It doesn't make it easier. It doesn't make it, like, any less. If you consider it shifty or dodgy or whatever, they're clearly doing it for a reason, because there's market demand out there, and the people that are buying it for the fourth, fifth, sixth time are the people not in our bubble, and they're the people that, oh, new Skyrim, I'm gonna buy it. That's as simple as the thought process goes, and yeah, it sucks, but that's the reality.
That's honestly, that's how a lot of people get into Star Citizen. And yeah, and like, that's why, like, somebody will literally just be like, oh, a $70 ship? Yeah, that's how much I would have spent on this game. And then people, yeah, are like, they're in a cult. It's like, no, dude. They just saw a spaceship and they want to play it. They just saw Skyrim and they want to buy it for whatever console they got. People have reasons for spending money, and I think that's what gets missed in the conversation surrounding this game.
Look, I don't think anyone should ever dictate how someone else should spend their money. It's their money. Yeah. They're adults. That, you know, they kind of do what they want. I think that the where a lot of the controversy comes with, you know, the purchasing of ships and the packs and all that kind of stuff, it's very similar to how, even, like, I know it's not the exact same, but with even just cosmetic microtransactions, the sheer fact that they are there upsets people, even though you fundamentally, in a lot of these cases, don't need to buy these skins, don't need to buy these packs, and you can still have a great time. The sheer fact that they're there and people know that other people are playing it and they think they might get some sort of competitive advantage, that is what upsets people. And then again, I think there's a line that can be drawn. If something's purely cosmetic, I usually never have an issue with it, unless it's locked behind a subscription purchase like it was with the Elder Scrolls Online. But when it starts to give you some sort of competitive advantage, at least in the games that I play, then you start to call into question whether this is good or bad. And the other example that I'll give is Fallout 76. When they first introduced the ability to buy lunchboxes that give you extra XP, people were up in arms because that was the one time, the one item where they weren't just cosmetic. And then everyone kind of forgot about it and thought, you know what, it's nice to be able to buy lunchboxes when I have $10 spare or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I hear you there. There's a big conversation around pay to win too in this game. I mean, the idea of buying ships, people think you spend more money on a ship and it makes you better. I will say that you can spend more money on a ship and it will probably help you to an extent, but they are putting a lot of gameplay elements into the game to scale back any sort of advantage you get from that. So one of the biggest ones is one that's really frustrating some people. and it's known as engineering, but essentially it's just maintenance. It's like, you basically look at every ship as a car. The bigger the ship, the more specialized it is, the more work it's going to have to do, right? The more stuff you have to do to keep it going. So if you have a small ship, you're a single person in a seat, you can fly that ship anywhere you want to go. But if you go up and grade to a 200 meter ship, and maybe you spent a lot of money on that, so it has more missiles and guns, but somebody has to actually shoot those missiles and guns. You can't just buy the ship, fly around in your single seat, and knock people out of the sky willy-nilly.
Right.
So you're going to have to keep it updated. You have to keep the parts changing out. You have to keep the fuel up to date. You have to keep things repaired. And because of the way Star Citizen works, you're actually running around doing these things. You can't just be on your keyboard controlling a whole capital ship. And there are some ways where you can get some help. But that's just like one of the things that they try to put in the way of this idea of a bigger ship doesn't necessarily mean you'll do better. You have the capability to, but you also need friends.
But if there are people in that position where they do have the friends, they do have the time, and they have the money to buy these ships, how bad would you say, or like, how would you say that could ruin the experience for a casual player just coming in? Does it affect them at all, or does it not? Because I'm not too sure how the MMO aspect works.
It could affect them. So there's a lot. It's a lot to unpack. Like the way the game, again, it's in development, so it doesn't work like this right now. But the way it's meant to work is that everywhere has security. And you know, we have this in Bethesda games. You kill someone in a city, and the guards are tracking you down. And that security based on where you are is faster. So like you're in a city, it's immediate. You'll be caught. You basically can't do anything. You're out nowhere in space. Nobody's gonna really catch you. So if like a solo player is going out on their own out to nowhere and they get attacked, that's definitely gonna affect them. But if they're staying in space where that kind of threat's gonna be reported, or if somebody attacks you, it gets automatically reported and you get some kind of a criminal rating for it. They're hoping that these systems will deter people. And they've built in prison systems into the game. So like if you die with a criminal rating, you actually get sent to prison. You have to work off your sentence by mining stuff out or try to sneak out and escape. They've built a mission that allows people to come and help you break out from jail, pick you up and take you away. And they get crime stats for that. Yeah, and so if they're taking you away and they get caught, you all go to prison. You have to do it again. And like they're trying to build a lot of the things into the gameplay to balance these things out. But we also know how gamers are, and and it's going to be a struggle no matter what they do.
Honestly, that it does sound pretty cool, that whole prison system.
It is. It's interesting when it works. Yeah.
I worry if there are the new people coming in that honestly have no idea about a lot of this stuff, and they think space game, I can fly anywhere I want and do what I want, and they get destroyed by this giant spaceship.
Yeah.
Is that going to deter them from wanting to play the game further? And you know what? Every game has that issue. A lot of online multiplayer games has that issue. But this is what happens. This is the conversation that happens when you start to introduce things that, even though there are those limiters, as you said, can still give you a competitive advantage if you know what you're doing, and you completely wreck new players to the game, and you might ruin their experience and they never want to play the game again.
I think that's an inevitable problem with MMOs, unfortunately. Like, no matter what you do, if you get in late, you'll always have some disadvantage. But I do think that the way they're building this game to have crews and ships, and like you said, somebody might not know what's going on. They might get in their ship and think they can fly anywhere. But if you do kind of know what's going on with this game, it'll be very easy, I think, to be in a ship that will be able to defend itself without needing to know people. You know, like, there's going to be NPC, like AI controlled ships that it's not confirmed, but I do think players will be able to just be on those and be a turret gunner on a ship that's just flying around or something like that. I think there are ways for newcomers to be able to experience the game without flying ships at all. And that doesn't account for the person, like you said, that wants to fly everywhere. But I think it will make a much better experience for newcomers that they don't actually have to fly.
Okay, that's pretty cool. I mean, look, like, every game is not meant to be for you. Like, some people that just want to fly everywhere will probably
this is a niche
better
game.
Off playing. Yeah, like they'd be better off playing No Man's Sky or something like that. You know what I mean?
That's the thing. Starfield, when Starfield was coming out, people were saying that it was going to kill Star Citizen, that Star Citizen was going to kill it, and like it was like Starfield is good because it's another space game. It's an opportunity for people to, like, when they're tired of Star Citizen and they want to have like that more laid back experience Starfield can offer, you could play that. And then vice versa. And I think people are missing the idea that, like, it's better that there are multiple types of these games so that you can play it in any way you want. Because Star Citizen, like you said, that's not for everybody. That's a rough game, man.
Especially if you come from happy-go-lucky Starfield into Star Citizen. I could imagine how you're going to have a bad time if that's your expectation.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's also things that people would be playing Starfield and they'd be like, man, this would be so cool if this was in Starfield. And I'm like, but that's in Star City. Like, I want people to know. But at the same time, it's not really made for those people. Like, also, flying from orbit down to the planet is entire. Like, Star Citizen people don't even think about it because we've been doing it for like 8 years now. And watching the development of Star Citizen, it made so much sense watching Bethesda as they did the messaging on how they were doing planets and how they were kind of very not showing how that worked or not talking entirely about loading screens. People who played Star Citizen were like, oh yeah, we saw them struggle with this. We know that this is difficult. And it ended up being that like Bethesda just probably didn't have the time and money to put into making that a thing.
So you kind of like touched on it. Like you have all these cool features in Star Citizen that people in Starfield might want. There was a bit of a hint there that you kind of want obviously more people to come play this game. What is the future of Star Citizen? Like, is there any indication as to when development is actually finishing? What's the kind of next step here for the game? Because I honestly have no idea, because it's been in development for so long. Is there an end goal? I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah. So mostly what the game revolves around is the game engine. Like I was saying, that's like, have you seen the trailer they released in November for their game engine?
No, I didn't.
It's a very good showcase of what they've been working on. And it's kind of like, imagine if, like if any game company that we know of, like a big game company, were going to release their major game and they were basically starting with like, they broke a game engine and were rebuilding it. That's what would take them the most time, the networking and all that stuff. So for like, sure. That's kind of been what's holding it back. That and Squadron 42, like I said. And I think their end goal right now is to get in the networking stuff, which is basically this year and next year is kind of, I think, what they're hoping for. And then the major career paths. So you're talking about mining, salvaging, being like a combat pilot, being a bounty hunter, being an explorer, like the main things you would do in space. I think they want those to be pretty solid, and they want a working economy and probably like 3 to 5 star systems. All of that, I think, is achievable in the next 3 years, but they have shied away from showing long-term roadmaps for, you know, reasons.
it makes sense.
Yeah, anything past, I think, 2 quarters, they're not super great at predicting because of the way that, like I said, the game engine networking development has caused them so many issues that they'll be like, yeah, this is probably going to be good in like a year. And then it turns out that they couldn't get something else to work, so that got delayed. And that just kept happening. So eventually they said 6-month roadmaps. And that's really that. And some internal leaks recently have shown that they want something in the next few years, but there's no real knowing. Really, for Star Citizen fans, it's what's coming in the next year. And
is there a point for you where 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, that you might genuinely think you get to the point where you're like, this has gone on long enough? You know, these features, these things that we wanted for a very long time, it's just taken too long. Even though in the moment, the reason for delaying might have seemed legitimate, when it happens 2, 3, 4, 5 times, is there going to be a point for you and possibly for other players where you're like, this is taking too long?
Yeah,
that's a hard question.
There is. I think actually this past year, a lot of people are getting to that point because these last 2 or 3 years have been particularly tense. I mean, obviously the pandemic made everything more difficult for people, but there have been expectations set over the past few years that haven't been met. And a lot of people have reached that point of like, okay, I know plenty of people who stopped covering or watching this game over the last year or two. And I would say that like, if the year that we just had didn't go the way it did, which really was a lot of the last quarter, I would not be in as positive a situation. Because like I said, a lot of this has been based on the building of the engine and the building of Squadron 42. And we didn't have a good grasp of where either of those things were for the last year. That, again, problems in the community. This is one of those things that have been making people angry. But they gave some very good messaging on that towards the end of last year. And it's looking like Squadron 42 will be coming out sometime in the next couple of years. So that makes a big difference on expectations with Star Citizen, because now this company is releasing a product, right? They're getting a game on the market. They're no longer, we're gonna get this done. They've released something that's been reviewed that people either, you know, like or dislike. We don't know yet, but everything changes when they can actually release a game. So I think that gives Star Citizen a good boost, but there's also definitely a point at which plenty of people will decide to say it's been too long. And for me, I've just been waiting for something better. That's what I always say whenever people are like, why do you guys still follow this game? I'm like, I'm waiting for a better space game to come around. Like, if Starfield was better, I would have stuck with Starfield. It's just not hitting exactly what I'm looking for. And that's what brings people to Star Citizen.
It's a really, really hard genre to get right. And you also, like, obviously the original Mass Effect trilogy was great, but you also saw those issues with Mass Effect Andromeda, with the styles of games that people are expecting now, with how big budgets are getting. When you say you're doing Mr. Open World space game, people instantly have a certain expectation. Mm-hmm. And I think when it comes to, you mentioned Starfield, I think they tried to go too big. They definitely, with the whole 1,000 planets and everything's procedural, it really undermined the reason that a lot of people play Bethesda Game Studios games in the first place. And that's put me on a really cool world. I can't walk more than five meters without finding something interesting. And Starfield just kind of didn't have that. But it is because when they say space game, they think I get to fly anywhere and do whatever I want.
Yeah.
It's hard. Like, it's a hard style of game to get right. And look at No Man's Sky in the beginning as well. They always seem to have issues.
Yeah. Always. It's ridiculously hard. We can't even get into space yet. We're trying to replicate it. We're not very good at it either. But I think that's what's driven a lot of the interest with Star Citizen is, like, there's so much potential in space stuff, and we've been watching, like, cool space movies and looking at art and reading books for, like, I don't know how many centuries, right? And then I guess movies more recently, but Star Wars, Star Trek, Dune, like, all of these different IPs get people excited for space. And then looking at the games industry since, like, 2008, there's, like, 3 AAA good space games you can name. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me that people are seeing something like Star Citizen, which might be a glitchy, buggy mess, but also at the very least allows you to jump out of your ship's airlock. You just can't do that in that many games. And I think that kind of novelty is what draws people.
No, and it makes sense. And that's why you see other space games like The Outer Worlds, and what's looking like to be Star Wars Outlaws is the more very small slice of a big space experience, because they want to fine tune it, get it right. But I still think it gives you a little bit of that sense of scale. Like, you feel like you're actually playing a space game, but it's not to the level of Starfield, let alone Star Citizen. So I don't mind those kind of smaller space style games, because I understand the reality of trying to make a game like this. But you're right. Like, what other game is like Star Citizen? There is none.
Yeah. And I haven't even gotten to, like, really tell you about this, man. This game's, I could talk about it for hours. There's some very legitimate reasons for somebody who doesn't even like spaceships to enjoy the game. I think the biggest barrier to entry is the fact that it's an MMO. Because I am
100%.
I'm RPG all the way. This is the first MMO I've ever played, and it's been a journey getting used to it. But I think that, like, people underestimate how much effort they're putting into the different gameplay elements in this.
So can I ask you, like, how that came about? Because you said Squadron 42 was, like, the crown jewel. It's the thing that a lot of people really want. Is the reason why they had the MMO aspect was purely to allow people to play the game during development? Is that the reason? Or is it a bit deeper than that?
No. They were announced at the same time. Like, it was always the expectation that there'd be an MMO multiplayer aspect and the single player aspect. The single player is just easier to develop, you know? Like,
for sure.
The MMO, it's nice that the MMO is always there, and I don't think this would have succeeded if they didn't have a playable version of the game the whole time.
Yeah.
But part of the problem with the development recently is that they scaled so much back from Star Citizen. This is where a lot of the delays come from. They've taken, like, 70 to 80% of their employees, and they've moved them all to the Squadron 42 development. So, like, the part we're all playing is progressing at a pace, but it feels slow. And then all these people are working on a game that we can't see. So,
welcome to regular game development.
yeah. And that's been a big part of the frustration. But the Squadron 42 was, they were both planned to always be there.
Okay.
They just don't let us see Squadron.
I mean, but it kind of makes sense, because, like, How often with dev studios are you able to see their big single player game years out in advance? People actually get upset if you announce it too early.
Well, I mean, that's what people pay for. Right?
Yeah, you're right.
That's the whole idea, is this is open development. Yeah. And I think that they've struggled with that, because you can show an MMO's development because it's just a bunch of features in a sandbox, but once you show too much of a single player game, then it's all out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got
how they sold it though, right? Like, you're spending money in this game because you'll be able to play it and see it throughout the entirety of development. Because there's been plenty of other Kickstarter campaigns that I've supported that I put money in and I know that I'm not seeing anything until it's actually released. And the biggest example that I'll give is the System Shock remake. I put $20 into that. I saw emails every month for about 4 or 5 years. Like, I had no idea what's going on with that game, but I knew what I was getting into. I knew that I wouldn't see it. Is it just because with Star Citizen, that's like they set the expectation that you're going to be part of the development process and you'll be able to play it and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. That makes sense. And there were two different purchases, just to be clear. Like, Squadron 42 is a different purchase. I don't remember exactly what the messaging is on that, but definitely over the last 6 years or so, they were like, we're not sharing as much about Squadron 42. Now, one of the things they do, which I think I actually have some of the things that they do to kind of keep up communication, because... Okay. You know, people think that CIG just sits back and doesn't say anything. But one of the things they do is they publish monthly reports on both Squadron 42 and Star Citizen, kind of what every studio around the world is doing. So we'll get, I don't know how many words it is, but I usually cover it on a stream. It takes like 2 hours to go through. And they do this every month to describe what all of the dev teams are working on. They do weekly long form videos, kind of podcast format, with different developers talking about different topics. So those are all live. Cool. They take questions from the audience. They publish a weekly 10 to 15 minute video showing like a new feature coming up or a new ship or something, just kind of like a regular community reach out. They host facility tours, developer meet and greets. But the biggest thing I think that they do that catches me off guard. I didn't really think about this. It actually came up in a podcast episode recently, but when you buy something from them, like if you buy a ship or something, even if you bought that back in like 2015, today, even if you've used the product, you made money with it, you had fun with it, you can go back into the store and melt it for store credit and buy a completely different ship. And somebody brought up the point that you can basically buy a ship that's not in the game yet, because they do sell, that's where the whole concept JPEG joke comes from. There are some ships that they'll like release the concept and then they'll make it, so you can buy that concept and they'll give you loaner vehicles in its place, so you can literally take those loaner vehicles, use them to make enough money, and then get the ship you really wanted and give them back to the store and get something different. You can kind of game the system. I think it's kind of their way of being like, hey, you know, we know these ships are changing throughout development. Like, some things might happen that you don't like. We're going to let you give this stuff back. But I think that's a big part of showing that they're kind of acting in good faith.
But you didn't know about that for a while.
No,
so
I did
not. Why was that the case?
Because I don't buy ships. I don't get involved in that. Yeah. People know a lot more of this stuff than I do. I've always known that you could like melt the ships for credit. It just never really clicked in my head that that's something other companies don't do. Because somebody put it into perspective of like, if I bought an item at a store and then went home and used it for a couple of months and then took it back to the store and traded it in for something else. And I was like, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. But also what you were saying before, a lot of companies don't, and it's probably because they are crowdfunded, so they feel like they need to, but a lot of companies don't have regular weekly podcasts you know, videos and letting people walk around their dev studio. That kind of community engagement is honestly why I got into community management in the first place, because I know how appreciated it is. And I think as a whole, it could be done much, much more on a AAA level. So that is really nice to see. Like, obviously, not having watched the podcast and kind of going off of your word, that's cool to see, especially it when you're putting in your bit of your money. And that's also part of the investment. It is receiving back these constant updates and being able to be part of this community.
Yeah. The game would have died without this community, man. It's
That's usually how it goes, right?
Yeah, we're a rough bunch of nerds, dude, but the passion carries it. And the community managers are great, too. I think they deserve more shout-outs than they get. Thank you to you for when you did it, because that ain't easy, dude. Communities.
It's not easy, because there is always a reality of AAA development to kind of appreciate. Like, you wish that you could be that person that sits on a live stream or a podcast week to week and tell everyone about what's happening with the games that you're making and behind the scenes and all that. But there are always layers, at least in AAA, of this person needs to clear off this messaging, and only these people are able to say these things publicly.
Yeah.
That's the reality. So when you're a community manager, there's sometimes only so much you can do and say, but at least it seems like with Star Citizen, they have a much more of an ability to share insider info.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, it really helps. I mean, some of the things, for instance, they do this yearly convention, and I think people get a kick out of the fact that this unreleased game has a convention. But they but they do this yearly convention, and it plays like a normal game convention. There's a gameplay tournament there. People got booths. They're making stuff, and they have this stage where they're showing off all these different demos and sort of like in-engine showcases of what's coming up. And I was saying earlier, that's kind of what set the stage for people to feel better about this game going into this season. I mean, if you had, like, if all that hadn't happened and then this whole $48,000 thing coming up had happened, the reaction would have been a lot different, because the morale before that event was a lot different. And I think the ability for a company to come out and not feel uneasy about doing that. Like, I think Bethesda is in a position where they probably want to come out and talk about what they could do with Starfield and get that sort of boost of morale from the community's reaction. And AAA studios, and more specifically AAA devs, are just held back from that, from the enthusiasm of the people that they're making games for, like from seeing the reward they get from what they're doing. And when they talk about this event they do for Star Citizen, they say it's just as much for the devs as it is for us. Because that's so important. Like, that open communication, it can be rough on devs, but I feel like them receiving it is just as important as us.
Dude, when I was working at Bethesda, the times that I enjoyed the most was when we had stuff to talk about. Because it's infectious when you see the community read the news that you put out, get excited, tell you how excited they are. That just fuels and motivates you. Like, at the end of the day, these aren't robots making games. They're humans with real feelings and emotions.
Yeah.
It's hard not to be excited by that. It's hard not to be excited by thousands of people on Twitter, in your live streams, sharing their excitement about your games. But there's only so many opportunities that is able to take place on a real level. And it's often when you've shared patch notes, or you've released this really cool update, or you've announced a game. It's just unfortunate with some developers, that's far and few between sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's our saving grace. We get that every week, every other week. And
that's good,
I think that's really built the health of this game up to a point where I say it can't fail. I don't want to jinx it. But I also I want to keep in mind, like, you make a very good point that there is a line and it can go too far. And I think that I don't see this slowing down. Like, I see the leveling out. We've had amazing growth over the last couple of years. I don't see it going anywhere, but I don't think that this is a done deal. And I think a lot of people who follow Star Citizen don't think that. There's a lot of ways it could go wrong. There have been a lot of ways it could go wrong. And I'm actually quite impressed that they've kept it on the rails this long.
Well, it's definitely not easy, especially when you have, you know, 1200 employees and you're dealing with community donated funds. So you have to be very careful with that, where you spend your money, because you know what I mean? Like, if you spend $10 million on a certain project or whatever, and it doesn't work out, how bad do you feel when that's $10 million, $20 million, $30 million of someone else's donated money, as opposed to an investor who's absolutely taking on a bit more risk with their investment? It's different. It's a different kind of feeling.
Yeah. You know, we have that. We actually, one of the worst things I think they did in terms of communication was they had, I talk about all this networking stuff they do for the engine. They had this like 2-year initiative that they put a lot of effort into. And at the end of that 2 years, that effort didn't show up in the game. And they kind of stopped talking about it. And
that's
and,
really, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like six to 10 months later. And, you know, hindsight, as always, they wanted to have a solution before they told us that the one that they had didn't work. But yeah, like, it was just like that. It didn't work. They had to go back and rework something else. It put, you know, another year or two onto the length of that thing. But like, when people hear about Star Citizen's delays and Star Citizen taking too long, it's like those little nuanced things that cause it to happen. And there's so much more to the story of like,
yeah,
they didn't even share with us that that happened. And
that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So there are times when it's good. There are times when it's not so good.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, you in your position, everyone in your community, like, if you aren't the ones voicing your concerns, it'll just never go on. You'll never go treated. You know what I mean? But I understand then when people like myself and others that do make the same comments, though they're probably not constructive, like, because they're, even the dev is probably not looking at the wider games industry and what they think of Star Citizen. They care more about what you're actually saying. So to kind of circle back to something like my original tweet, for you as a community, it's probably not helping the conversation. It's not progressing anything. It's just annoying noise.
Well, it definitely spurs a lot more conversation in our Discords.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's always fun.
Yeah, but no, I do hope that we get to a point where, like, when Star Citizen comes up, obviously there will always be like the main discussions, but talking about the gameplay of it, it is unique stuff. Actually, why don't I ask you, like, what's something you love doing in a game in Starfield?
Honestly, man, it is just walking around and seeing interesting things. Like, I want to get lost in a game and have 10 hours go by and not even realize. Know what I mean? That is what I love most about playing BGS games. And I'm sure there is an element of that in Star Citizen.
not quite walking. Like BGS games.
But like they're different. I get it.
Yeah. But that's the funny thing is like, yeah, you'll go play Star Citizen and you can fly your ship and you can go and get a rover and actually drive around on the ground. But like, there's not going to be a single AI for you to go and talk to. And that's
not the game. I get it. I understand.
It's supposed to be. They just they haven't gotten there yet.
Wait, so that's meant to be the Squadron 42 stuff, right?
Well, Star Citizen is meant to be heavily based on NPC interaction as well. Like, it is an MMO, but we're going to be living in a universe that's simulated 9-to-1 AI. So, like, you're not actually, everybody you see isn't going to be a player.
Okay, so what's the progress of that? Like, when's that coming to the game?
Well, AI is in the game. I'll give
but
you
not
that
9-to-1.
No. That's one of the more contentious parts of progress is the whole simulation. But AI is in the game.
Right.
Again, going back to the networking issues, that's why AI doesn't work very well. Because they're running this...
Right.
They're running this game... Like, their whole thing is that everything's super detailed. So if you take a ship, every ship is made of like 200 parts, not 200, like 200 main parts. Each of those 200 main parts is made of like 200 more small parts. Each of those small parts have to be synced across the internet and displayed to all these hundreds of people around you. And in a 64-bit precision engine, it's like insane detail. So
yeah,
it's constantly struggling. And a big part of what they've been working on over the last 5 years is a solution to that called server meshing. We won't get into that. That's a lot. But until they can get that working, the AI just doesn't really run very well. And that's, I think, probably holding a lot of people back from playing because you can't walk up to people and get missions. You can't shop with them. You can't do all that stuff.
So that level of detail that you mentioned with the 200 ship parts and whatever.
Yeah.
Can I honestly ask you, is that important to you as a player?
Yeah.
Okay. So they can't change course on that.
No. Because each of those parts you can craft.
Okay.
So when the economy comes around and you have your big group and you guys want to have a business, you can build spaceships. And all those spaceships will have to derive from those parts, which will have to derive from materials, which you'll have to talk to a miner to go retrieve for you. So like, okay. It ends up coming back to the fact that it plays into gameplay. This game also is building a destruction system that's kind of like Battlefield Bad Company 2.
Right, right.
So like
right.
Everything breaks apart. So it's all very segmented and modular.
Okay. So pretty much they just have to solve that problem. There's no other way around it.
Yeah. And it's really, it's an interesting freaking way they're solving it. I won't get too deep into it, but it's basically synchronous. It's essentially the game you're playing is the loading screen. One of the big things people keep bringing up to compare this to Starfield is there's no loading screens in Star Citizen.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that like they're, instead of your player rendering the area around you, they're going to have each server rendering all of the stuff around it. Not rendering, but loading in everything around it. And these servers will be made to move around the game system and scale based on how much stuff is being loaded. So like if 5 spaceships load into a space, the server could handle all that. But if 20 spaceships load in, they might have 2 servers, one for 5 and one for 10 or 15. It's bad math. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, and that's their solution. And for the first time ever, they proved that technology happening in October. That's a lot of what turned people's excitement around I was talking about.
Yeah. So I hope for you, all of your sakes, that in the next 3 years, you get everything that you want. Because unfortunately, like, if it does, because I've not heard any of this stuff because I don't play Star Citizen. I'm not listening to podcasts, watching videos, et cetera, et cetera. The only reason why I'm finding out about this stuff is because I'm talking to you right now.
And I appreciate that. Thank you.
No, of course. No. And it's been really, really enjoyable. But the other people that were in my position, at least, that don't get this level of interaction, they're not going to be able to learn about any of that stuff because all they're getting, unfortunately, are those negative, you know, sometimes clickbaity articles.
Yeah.
It would be awesome if there was some way to be able to kind of communicate this stuff to the general audience. But also, they want a game to play. They want, if they're a single player fan, they want a campaign where you can go up and talk to AI and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So in my mind, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, this probably, in terms of the negative sentiment side from the wider industry, probably won't change until the game is actually done. And it'll never be done, but as content complete as it possibly could be, that's when Squadron 42 is actually out.
Yep. That was the other part of the equation. Server mesh getting proved and the fact that Squadron 42 might be close are two signs that like this could not mainstream game, but it can start to get a little bit more attention and stand on its own 2 feet.
Well, I think the question is like, put yourself in the position of a reviewer at IGN. When would they review Star Citizen properly? Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like when there's a single player game that comes out, they get a code and that's the time.
Yeah.
When is that time for Star Citizen? When is that date where the dev is like, the game is done? That I think that is like their best opportunity to try and bring even more people into the community.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And that's not for a few years for sure. But yeah.
I think you're going to have to like, it sucks, but there's going to be a lot of that negativity until then.
Yeah. You have to, you really have to weather it, and that's I'm okay with that. I'm reserved with that, and I think that every year it gets better and better. You know, this last time when this happened and all this, we had people like Asmongold reacting to it, and that kind of stuff put a lot more of a magnifying glass, like you said, for the people who are only seeing negative stuff to realize there might be some substance here. And it doesn't really bother me that much that it's not popular. Like, the game's not ready for it. Star Citizen would get absolutely roasted if it was on the main stage all the time. They need a lot more work on it. It's rough, man.
Yeah,
so,
no,
I'm okay with that.
I completely get it. No, fair. I mean, you don't want another and I think devs don't want another repeat of what Cyberpunk 2077 went through. And then maybe that's why the comparisons are taking place, as you said, because they were both been in development for a very, very long time. But no one wants a repeat of that. No one wants a repeat of No Man's Sky, even though they eventually reclaimed a lot of that negative sentiment. That mark is always there, and you never want to be that dev that's going through it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was rough, man. I was so excited for that game. Like, ever since that first concept trailer they released.
Yeah, dude, I was at Bethesda when we released Fallout 76. That was my game. That was the game that I pioneered, and I covered on my YouTube channel for many, many, many years. And I still, to an extent, do it today.
Yeah.
And it's not nice to be on that side of the fence when things are clearly not going well. Like, it was a very, very rough launch. So no one wants to be in that spot. It just sucks.
Yeah. You know? What do you think... After all this talk, what would you say is like the main reason everybody has such a negative reaction when they see Star Citizen?
Honestly, man, at this stage, I think it is the exorbitant price of things, one, and two, things like all you hear is this is delayed, that is delayed, that is delayed, right? Especially with a community-funded game, it's just never a good look. And it is dictated by what, you know, articles are written and what videos you see from people that aren't actively invested in the community because they're just doing it to cover the news. But I would say those are the two things, especially because on the money side of it and the things that are available to purchase, as I mentioned to you, you don't see that in any other game because if you did, they would get roasted for it. You don't see a pack to buy all the mounts in Elder Scrolls Online for X amount because they... people would just revolt against the company. And as we've touched on today, it's because, in part at least, yeah, one is actually funded by a company called Microsoft, that little old company. And there's another one that's community funded. So it is kind of different. But honestly, that's what it is. It's such a shock. It's such a shock. When I told my wife about it, and she was like, why is that even an option? Like, you have to get over that hurdle. And some people just can't because they don't see it in any of the games that they're playing.
So it's mostly because we don't see it in other games, right? Because
that's it. 100%.
We all know that like there are tons and tons of hobbies where people will just spend that kind of money on anything, right? People will buy metal coins for that amount, and people don't really bat an eye.
No. Like, I mean, like, I think there is a line even with some hobbies and like how much it is, but gaming traditionally has been. You buy a game for $60 or whatever it is in your region. And that's why when microtransactions and DLC started to become a thing, people were like, I don't know what to do with this because I've spent this amount of money. Why am I spending more? Gaming has always been a very low cost hobby. Mm-hmm. Compare it even to the price of going to watching a movie. You spend, I don't know how much it is where you are, but in Australia, you might spend, you know, 20 AUD to go watch a movie. Value for money for like the time that you're spending versus the dollar amount, gaming craps on it. Gaming is so cheap for how many hours of entertainment that you get per dollar. And when that is challenged in any kind of way, it started with horse armor and Skyrim. People are like, what
was
the
that 2008
hell is
2009
this? yeah but you know what I mean. So when you start to see like very, very high cost prices of things in Star Citizen, it's a shock to the system. If this was, I don't know, I really like, you know, cars, spending 48 grand on doing up a car might not seem like a crazy thing because that's kind of been the price roughly that things have been done, but not with gaming. Gaming has always been low cost.
But that's a problem with the industry, right? Everybody assumes games are cheap to make. That's why we see companies like Bethesda, CD Projekt Red, Bungie, all these companies get ridiculous standards set and then they get raked across the coals for putting out an incomplete game. But everybody expects them to do it for cheap, to do it with the games not being too expensive, to do it in a certain amount of time. And then when you come across a game that's like, okay, well, we're going to sell assets to pay our developers. Mm-hmm. People are suddenly like, wait, why are you charging so much money for these things? Do you think if there were no ships attached, if it was just click this button to give us $3,000, people would care?
That's a good question. Probably not, because how many YouTubers and whatever have an option to donate to a channel and you can spend that amount of money. You know what I mean? Like it is, you're right. It is. If there was just an option where you could donate that amount, people wouldn't bat an eye because the option to buy. Yeah. It's I think it's a little bit different. I can't explain why.
Yeah. It's tied to the idea that you're getting a ship.
For sure.
And I think a lot of people think you can't get those ships in the game. Mm. You can't like each of those ships you can earn in the game. Probably within a week of gameplay. So
every one of them.
Yeah. There are two ships you can't get, and they were both sold in partnership with AMD and Intel. So obviously those companies won't let them sell them. Every other ship, you can earn it in the game if it's been out for more than, I think, 2 quarters. So
and that's the nuance of information that you just don't get. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I saw the article the other week.
And like you said that most of this stuff comes from the fact that people are hearing only negative stuff, but you don't really get articles that talk about those positive things.
No.
Like they doubled the server sizes 2 summers ago. People still think we're playing with like 25 players in these servers and they're at over 100.
Yeah, I do think that unfortunately it goes back to what we were saying before, that negativity sells. It's a real issue that I've had with just discourse and video gaming for a while now.
Yeah.
And again, as a YouTuber, I'm not sitting here from a high horse. I've engaged in a bit of it because it works. And I really wish there was another way around it. I really wish that I could title my videos video game news for the 9th of January. And that's all I had to put into it and it got views. But that's it. I didn't have to put any work into a thumbnail. But that's not the way it is. Like there is a reality here where, when they do a negative hit piece, it's going to get more clicks than one that's happy-go-lucky. And it sucks. And I don't know what the answer is. I honestly don't know.
It's a bummer, dude. Like, thinking of the title and thumbnail is the most stressful part of a video now. You can think.
Yeah.
I wonder how people who make like movies feel about the movie posters. They're like, oh man, is this poster? It looks, oh geez, is this clickbaity enough?
Yeah, no, but it has to go through your mind. But I think like the only way that can at least change in some ways is, I don't know if are there any journalists like that are working at these places or even other big YouTubers that do genuinely try and sit down and give the game a chance and cover it in a better light?
Okay. Yeah, a ton actually. You know Digital Foundry?
Oh, I love their work.
Yeah, they're pretty positive on Star Citizen.
Well, that's where it begins. It is places like that. Yeah.
Linus Media Group, they actually did a live show when they were playing it. There's a few YouTubers who play this, like Level Cap Gaming. He did Battlefield stuff. Jack Frags pops in every once in a while. Luke Stevens, I know he does some stuff. He's covered it. There's a decent amount of buzz around it. It's just that overarching message is still very much there.
Yeah, and as I said to you before, I don't think that's going to change too much until you actually get closer to a hard, let's call it a release date of some kind.
Yeah, they need to release a game. Like, Squadron 42 looks great, but until it's out, people aren't going to think that the company can do all that much.
Mm.
But I don't want to take too much of your time, man. This has been a fantastic talk. Anything else that you would like to know? Any questions that you had before we signed off?
No, I think that this has been really good for me, and I appreciate you kind of inviting me and telling me about a lot of the nuances that I've just missed, and understandably, admittedly, that I've missed just reading articles from people that don't play the game and watching videos from people that don't play the game. I think my eyes have definitely been opened up, and even though there are still, and even though you have reservations about certain areas of the game, this has been really, really good for me to at least understand where you're all coming from. 100%.
I appreciate you saying that, and I'm not going to let you leave this podcast till you agree to jump in the game with me during the next time they offer it for free. I got to show you at least just a little bit of it.
All right, deal.
Thank you. I promise. It's very easy. It's a quick download. They let people play this thing for like at least a month out of every year for free. So I will let you know when that happens, but I would love to show you at least a little bit of what both enrages and excites us every day.
Man, I'm looking forward to it. Let me know.
Awesome, dude. Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast. For anybody who is listening, I'd love to give you the chance to let them know they can find your content and what kind of stuff you're covering.
Yeah, so my YouTube channel name is Lone Vault Wanderer. You can search that, find it on YouTube. And Bethesda has always been a big part of what I cover, and it'll always be. But I'm also trying to branch out doing more general Xbox stuff and video game industry news. So if you're interested in news and discussions videos, you can follow me there.
It's good stuff. I really like the format and the background. You can only see a little bit of it here, but you have one of the cooler backgrounds I know of. So
I'm gutted because we might have to move soon. So this is all going to have to get packed up.
That's so much.
I'm gutted, man. I'll have to find a similar room where I can set this exact thing up, but it won't be the same.
Man. Yeah, we constantly are moving. So like our background is always changing. And that's why it hasn't been that complex yet, but hats off to you, man.
Fair.
Before we go, just seeing some of the stuff back there, what was your like main console growing up?
It was definitely the Nintendo 64.
Okay.
For sure. I think the first one that I started playing was the Super Nintendo, but the N64, Ocarina of Time, Mario Kart, Mario Party, Perfect Dark, those were the golden years of gaming in my mind, and we'll never get it back.
No, there's too much downloadable content now, man. You can't just get something and have to deal with the bugs.
Yeah, it's all nostalgia, but yeah. N64 was definitely my console.
How do you feel about them dipping into movies now?
Oh, I love it. I love the Super Mario movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was, and I was so critical, especially of Chris Pratt being Mario, but it smacked me in the face. It was a really, really fun movie.
Cool.
And look, I've always been a sucker for video game adaptations to film. I'm always one that I'm not expecting the world here, but when that was good, and I actually didn't mind the recent Mortal Kombat movie either, I wish they keep doing it. And obviously this year we're getting the Fallout TV show. So let's see how that is as well.
Fingers crossed for that, man. I hope they can. Just a few more good things from video games. That Halo TV show, I didn't even watch that and it disappointed me, man. Like from proximity, I got embarrassed.
Yeah,
so I would love to see more and more video game IPs do good on the small and big screen, because these stories are great.
Sure. No, right, they really are. Thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks for joining me again. For everybody who's listening or watching, you can obviously catch this on audio platforms with no ads, but we love to see you seeing our beautiful faces. So thanks for joining us on YouTube. Appreciate y'all, and I'll catch y'all next week.